does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it all.
NFL draft is upon us. I would imagine that that probably is to the relief of our next guest, as it is myself, because you get to a point where you're like, okay, I think we've talked about each and every person, and now let's see where this slots out. Matt Taylor is the voice of the Colts, and as you just heard, brought to you by the good folks at Shelby Materials, your concrete and aggregate experts. And Matt will tonight be, of course, on the draft coverage that you'll hear right here beginning at 7 o'clock. On 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan. They will be broadcasting from Top Golf. That is for season ticket holders, by the way. Matt, are you a good golfer?
I am the opposite of a golfer. Not only do I stink at golf, I don't play golf. My neighbor next door actually just dusted off some old clubs that he found in the back of his shed. And I reluctantly took them because I got to do some, like, you know, scrambles in the summer just to kind of show up and I love doing that. I love like the social component of golf, but the game itself it's always been a struggle for me.
Yeah, it's the other thing that's tough, Matt, is you reach an age where it's kind of hard to learn the game, because if all your buddies have been golfing for like 10 or 15 years, you don't really want to slow them down, right? You're like, yeah, they're not going to want to play with me, right?
Right. And golf to me is, this is going to sound, you know, maybe a little bit self-centered, but I didn't like to do anything early on at a young age that I wasn't good at. Like, I kind of took to football pretty quick and basketball and baseball.
No, I totally get it.
Golf right away. And so I just, you're like, nah, I don't want to do that. And that's kind of plagued me ever since.
Yeah, I totally understand. Believe me, I just literally, I'm in my second month of ever having touched a golf club, taking lessons. And like, certain days I'm like, hell yeah, I am Dustin Johnson. And then other days I'm like, you know what, I'm just dusting this off.
But I get why people do like it, because you hit that one. I've experienced this. You hit that one shot.
No doubt.
You know what I mean? Like, you line it up, and it's just.
Oh. It almost always happens at the end of a round, and you're like, okay, now I got to get back out there.
And then you're like, you know what, like, I can do this every time, right? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you chase that feeling, and plus you're outside. You're probably, you know, with your buddies, and maybe you're doing a couple cold ones. I want to like golf, because all of that sounds awesome, but you have to chase this ball around for 4 hours in between, and I suck at it. And my dad and my brother are the two best golfers that I know, and it kills them. It pains them that I don't take up golf. And that's their big bonding thing. And I very much regret that, but I think you're right, Jake. I think you have to have the patience, you have to have the money for it, and it's just one of those things. I don't know if I'm willing to give up, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours of my day to get better at it.
Well, Top Golf is a good place, by the way, for people, and, you know, obviously Back Nine as well. Both of them are good places for people to go out, have fun, and swing around and get good views. And you will be there tonight. Let's begin with this. Golf is an inexact science. So, too, is the NFL draft, and trying to prognosticate it. We'll begin with this, Matt. Is there a position, as the Colts are sitting tentatively at 15, we don't know if they'll stay there, but is there a position on the roster that you can probably for the first two rounds of the draft cross off and say, I think Chris Ballard feels like they're pretty good at that position? Not quarterback, obviously, yeah. Not running back, but it, other than a skill set position, what's the one that you're like, yeah, they're probably good there?
I think that's a good question. I think it's probably defensive tackle. You got, you know, you both have Grover Stewart and DeForest Buckner under contract. Both those guys got new deals this offseason. And so you got a lot of investment. Both guys are under contract through at least 2026. And you've also brought in free agency Raekwon Davis. And I think that's kind of a really under the radar signing, because listen, you didn't have to be a football savant last year to notice that when Buckner and Stewart were out of the game, the running defense was just different. It was way more susceptible to the run. You know, those six games where Grover Stewart was out of the lineup, we've talked about this. I mean, the Colts gave up a full yard per carry average more than when he was healthy. So I think it's probably safe to say that at least with those premium picks, right, you know, rounds 1 through 3, the Colts probably aren't going to focus on defensive tackle. They're obviously probably not going to focus on quarterback, if at all, in this draft. You know, the one position that I think is a little bit kind of under the radar, and some people might kind of raise their eyebrow at it, is running back, right? Because you got Jonathan Taylor, right, and he's got his contract squared away, and you don't have the off-the-field drama like you had going into last year. But you did lose Zach Moss in free agency, and if you played a game today, you know, I just don't know who your backup three-down running back would be. You know, I think someone would probably emerge in the case of, you know, Trey Sermon or Tyler Goodson, and then you got Evan Hull coming back. And, you know, the book on him last year was that he was a great pass-catching back. But I always think it's kind of good practice just through the nature of that position, the wear and tear on running backs, and just the bang for the buck that you can get. I always think it's good practice to draft a running back every year.
Voice of the Colts, Matt Taylor, is our guest, brought to you by Shelby Materials, the concrete and aggregate experts. Mate, for the Colts, it's clear that the conversation has been throughout the last couple of weeks, do they go and address clear needs on defense? Do they go and grab somebody that will help in the development of Anthony Richardson? Last year's draft is a bad example because it was clear quarterback was the need, but you've covered this entire era of Chris Ballard. At West 56th, in conversations, in meetings, how different does this draft feel to drafts of the last five or six, where there were clear needs to address, but again, last year's a bad example because, of course, the focus was it's got to be quarterback? What's the difference overall in the tone, in the way this draft is compared to other Ballard drafts, and is there anything noticeably different?
Well, I think it's a good question. I think it's a right topic to bring up, because even if you do want to throw in last year when they needed a quarterback, they addressed it, and then you go back to years prior. You know, 2022, it was wide receiver help, and in the second round, it was Alec Pierce. They didn't have a first round pick that year. You know, 2021, it was Kwity Paye. The 2018 draft, got to protect Andrew Luck, and you trade back, and you still get a premium player in terms of the generational player like Quentin Nelson. So, you know, there is precedent in history that Chris Ballard does draft for need at the top of the draft. So, with that in mind, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he addresses their top two perceived needs. And I think it's important to underline the word perceived, and that would be wide receiver and cornerback. It does kind of feel different this year in that, you know, you look at the roster and the way it's constructed and the way the Colts have operated in free agency. I mean, Jake, you've been covering the Colts a long time. I've been doing this now for over a decade. I've never seen the Colts have so much continuity coming back in one off season. I mean, I've never seen one side of the ball have all 11 starters coming back, but the Colts have both sides of the ball. All 22 starters are coming back from last year because of, again, the way they've operated with bringing back some key in-house free agents. I mean, I looked it up the other day. Right now, the Colts roster right now has only four players that didn't spend at least some time on the Colts roster last year, whether that's active roster or on the practice squad. You got Joe Flacco, Raekwon Davis, and then a couple guys on the back end of the roster. So they are very much, you know, continuity, you know, building from within, drafting well, developing, re-signing. So if there ever was a year to maybe trade up, right? Last year the Colts had 12 draft picks. I'm not speaking for Chris Ballard, but I don't think if you have 9, 10, 11 draft picks this year, all those guys make the team just because of the amount of guys you're bringing back. So again, generally speaking, this is me talking, if there ever was a year to maybe trade up and get big time difference makers, right? Add a guy to your roster right now that next year is going to be considered one of your top 5 to 7 best players. If there ever was a year to do that, this might be the year because of all the continuity, all the leadership you're bringing back, and the consistency from last year's roster.
Matt, I want to be clear to our listeners here because I don't want to put you in a bad position. I mean, you are the voice of the Colts, which means, you know, in this conversation, there are questions we're going to ask you where we can lean on your perspective, which is obviously valuable. But at the same time, in this situation, I'm going to ask you a gut question. In other words, I want to make sure that people understand I'm not asking you to speak for the Indianapolis Colts here, okay? I don't want to put you in that position. But I do believe that there is the possibility. I'm sure you're like me, Matt. You hear, like, you know, people send you stuff, and they're like, my next door neighbor's mailman says that he knows for a fact this is the case, right?
My Uber driver.
That's right. But I do believe that Jim Irsay, I mean, what we know about Jim Irsay for a fact is that he is somebody that has great pride in the franchise that he owns and its history. And I think that he is a sentimental guy, but it doesn't take sentimentality to desire a Marvin Harrison Jr. He's the best receiver in this draft, and he is arguably the best player last year in college football. Do you think that it is possible that Jim Irsay has planted the seed to Chris Ballard, in fact, to try to be aggressive about if he was going to move up, that being one of the targets?
Well, that's, you know, this is not a cop-out answer. I have no idea. All I know is that Jim, I think tonight, obviously, you know, from a historical standpoint, has been very much involved in the draft process. And Chris and Frank in the past, and now Shane, you know, very much consider his input. I mean, Chris is the guy. I mean, the buck stops with Chris. I mean, you got 20-plus personnel guys, all the coaches, and Jim Irsay is the type of guy that's going to let Chris, you know, do the job. But, you know, I just go back to that 2020 season. You know, that was the COVID year. Everybody's at home and kind of displaced and you know, hooked up remotely. You know, but that was the year where everybody just kept tracking Jonathan Taylor. And it's like, I can't believe Taylor's still available. Man, I can't believe that team passed up on Taylor. And, you know, you get 5-6 spots away in the draft order and Taylor's still on the board. Irsay, you know, steps in and looks at Chris and says, you guys have been talking about this guy now for 6 weeks of how much you love him. And, you know, man, it'd be great to be in a position to draft this guy, even though he's a running back, getting him in the first or second round. Well, there he is. Go get him. And if you love him that much, you know, let's go get our guy. And so he kind of nudges Chris in those directions when the time is right. But again, you know, Chris has final say and the buck stops with him. But I think everybody obviously would have to be in lockstep and full agreement, you know, Shane Steichen, Chris Ballard, and Jim Irsay to pull off a trade of that magnitude. That's a whole bunch. You're talking about multiple first round picks to go from 15 to probably 3 or 4. I mean, that's a boatload. I mean, I've seen where the Colts, you know, trade up to, you know, hypothetically, the mock drafts have them going to 8 or 9 to pick up one of those top three receivers. And even that's pretty steep when it comes to Chris Ballard's MO, because he's never traded up in the first round, right? He's had 6 first round picks. He's traded back or out of the first round 4 times. He's never traded up. So even that kind of a bold move to get up to 8 or 9 would be, you know, pretty, I think, significant considering Chris's history. But again, I think that's where those players are. That's where those players reside. You know, top end players at premium positions, they go top 10. And I'm not saying the player that you bring in at 15 isn't going to be a good, solid player. He's just not going to be that guy that maybe goes, you know, 7 or 8, those top 3 receivers that we've been talking about ad nauseum now since January. So I think that's kind of where this roster is right now. It's solid. It's put together. You know, it's going to be hard pressed for you to find a better built top to bottom roster. But what the Colts need to compete to take that next level, to be in the mix in January and February, is just more game breakers, game changers, guys that put the ball in the end zone and take it away. You know, we see the best teams like the Chiefs have guys that play those premium spots like defensive end and corner and quarterback and receiver and lead tight ends. I think the Colts are looking for more of those guys. And again, if there ever was a year to do it, this might be the year that maybe Jim Irsay nudges the personnel staff to maybe go bold and bring in a guy that's going to win you a few more games.
Voice of the Colts, Matt Taylor, is our guest. Matt, this isn't a wild take by any means, but I've been one of the many that views Chris Ballard as smartest guy in the room. I think he's arrogant at times. I think a lot of general managers are arrogant. I don't think it's him. I feel like you have to kind of carry yourself that way. So I don't necessarily fault him for that. It's just, it's the vibes that he sometimes gives off that I perceive. From your seat, and for Colts fans, if they at 15, and let's say for the sake of argument that a Bowers or somebody like that is available, if they go defense at 15, and yes, they could still, it's a deep wide receiver draft, they could always figure it out in day 2. If they go defense at 15, does that say more about their belief in the players they already have or their belief in Anthony Richardson to make it work with the players they already have?
I think it probably means that they like the receivers that they have and that they are also trusting the process of their evaluation of the wide receiver class in totality, you know, the depth of the class. I mean, draft 101, you know, again, you're talking about trying to add more playmakers, and I get it, more weapons for Anthony Richardson and take this offense over the top. But if you just kind of look at it more big picture, if you sit at 15 and you look at who might be available and what your biggest needs are, I mean, a shutdown corner, a guy that you can trust and press man-to-man coverage, that's a big need too, considering the youth that you are bringing back within that secondary outside of Kenny Moore next year. And so that's still a premium position. So if you look at the draft depth at corner, it's not nearly as deep as it is at wide receiver. And I think that's kind of what you have to ask yourself. And I think I'm simplifying it probably too much in this case, but
I mean, to your point, I have them taking Tyrion Arnold, right? Or I could see them going Quinyon Mitchell in part because I don't think Bowers is going to be there, and in part you're right, it's a premium need that they need to address. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, one of the biggest defensive storylines going into the season is going to be how do these extreme numbers kind of even out on that side of the ball, and by that I mean, you know, the blitz rate is the lowest in the NFL. But the zone defensive coverage rate was the highest. You know, how much of evening out those numbers does Gus Bradley have to do? How much more can he trust the secondary next year, more so than he did last year because of another year of development and growth and just more familiarity with those guys? But again, I think, you know, do you want the second or third best corner in this draft at pick 15? Or is the gap between cornerback 2, 3 and number 4 wider than wide receiver 5, 6, 7 that maybe you can get in the second round? Or in other words, you know, maybe in the second round you say to yourself, we're still going to get 85-90% of what we can get of those top 3 wide receivers that are going to go in the top 10 tonight, and feel good about getting those guys either in the second round or third round, because that's where we got Josh Downs last year. Last year's draft class was really ample at wide receiver as well. But we know the drop-off between, you know, the second and third and the fourth cornerback is pretty steep, and the value is just not going to be there later on at the cornerback position, and we needed to address that. We got to get more high-profile there. We need to add more talent in the secondary. That might be, again, an oversimplification of things, but maybe just one of those ideologies that Chris Ballard uses tonight. And again, I don't think you can go wrong. If you go corner, if you go wide receiver, if Bowers is there at 15, I think the answer is yes. I don't think you can go wrong, again, based on how well this roster has been put together in terms of continuity and consistency and starters you're bringing back from last year to this year.
Matt, you've been through this now. This is year number what for you in terms of live coverage of the draft?
I think this is 13 or 14.
Okay.
2012 was my first.
So you've been through it, you know, a number of times. Things are a little bit different now because of, you know, we know obviously Jim Irsay being outside of the building, and he's been public about the fact that he'll participate via Zoom as opposed to being in the war room. But just in general, maybe even in comparison to last year when everyone knew they were in the quarterback derby and drafting up towards the front, how, if any, how are things different this year? And just for our listeners, can you offer perspective as to what the building is like in the process of leading up to the draft, and whether or not the mood or just the focus, whatever else, has altered in any way by drafting 15 as opposed to 4, as opposed to no first rounder, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, it's always exciting. I mean, it is. It's always, especially with the way the Colts operate under Chris Ballard, it's exciting, but it's also nerve-wracking because of how important it is. I mean, there's a lot of pressure put on the draft in terms of winning because of the way the Colts operate in free agency, right? So I think no matter what, under Chris, the draft is always going to be, you know, met with a lot of hype and, you know, kind of nervous energy. And I think that's true this year, especially when you look at just how loaded the AFC is. You know, I mean, right now it's April 20, whatever. It's April 25th. I mean, right now, guys, we can probably get out pencil and paper and scribble in four teams right now that are going to make the playoffs in the AFC. Right. So it's going to be really difficult with the parity in this conference to make the postseason, which means you got to nail the draft. I mean, and Chris knows that. Like he understands sort of the pressure that goes with this job based on the way the Colts have been built. So every year there's going to be a ton of importance on it. It's the bedrock. It's whatever you want to call it. It's the bloodline, or the lifeblood, I should say, of winning in the NFL. But I think it is different this year. I mean, last year was just nuts because of the spec. I mean, you want to talk about just paralysis by analysis every year. Last year was just at an all-time high because of the quarterback and picking in the top five. But that's the good thing about this year is that, you know, you don't have to talk about all the picks and the trades between 2019 and 2022 and, you know, first rounders giving up and all the money and all the salary that you've paid to, you know, bring in Jacoby Brissett and Phillip Rivers and Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan. You know, the Colts, they only made the playoffs once in that time period. So it is exciting in that sense that you've got the quarterback, right? I know he's coming off injury, but you know who that is, right? You've got the great, innovative, young, you know, players coach in Shane Steichen. The defense brings back all 11 starters. Continuity there. Year number three under Gus Bradley. Let's make some tweaks. Let's, you know, there's no excuse why this defense can't be a top 10 unit. Again, I sound like a broken record, but it's exciting this year because I think this 15th pick, or maybe it's a little bit later, or maybe it's a little bit sooner, who knows. But I think this top 15 pick this year has got to be a guy that changes the game for the Colts. It has to be a guy that either flirts with a starter position or has a big time role, but is just another game changer that is considered in your top 10 best players you have for 2024, despite that guy being a rookie and a first year player.
Matt, a couple of years ago, well, it was more than a couple, many years ago, I guess now it would have been probably the Dallas Clark draft somewhere in there. Back when the draft was done just at the, you know, the Colts complex, and the local media would be there in the room and we'd watch, and then they'd bring Dungy or Pulley and whoever in. I'm not going to say any names, but somebody that was in a position similar to the one you hold, I sat next to and enjoyed it. Nice. But I think there was a nervous energy, and that nervous energy then turned into the person cracking open a bag of Hershey Kisses, which was cool, and then began eating the Hershey Kisses by unwrapping the foil with one hand and then popping into the other. It was like watching somebody eat M&Ms. It was impressive. And then I actually ended up having to wade through ankle-deep tinfoil on my way to the restroom. Do you have a nervous energy food that you eat during the draft?
No, I do not. No. And I don't drink either on a game day or on a night like this where you're going to be, you know, around a microphone or needing to be in front of a microphone for 3 plus 4 hours, because that's just the recipe for success. So thankfully, I steer clear of the junk food and pretty much all liquids, because you're going to get up and you're going to miss something, especially with all the trades they're forecasting tonight. I mean, you get up for 5 minutes, you're going to miss a bunch, and it's probably going to affect the Colts big time. So I'll stay put, and I will be non-hydrated and kind of hungry for 4 hours tonight.
You know, the not drinking part is a smart move, right? Let's be real here. Because, you know, you also don't know how long you're going to be there, right? I mean, I know tonight's like a pretty strict window, but, you know, it can be at times, you know, a long. And you guys, your coverage goes how long?
We start at 7, so the draft starts at 8, but our coverage starts at 7, so we'll have that, you know, hour-long pre-draft show up at Topgolf. Rick's going to be there, myself, Casey Vallier, Jeffrey Gorman, kind of keeping us on track and monitoring trades and things like that. But we're going to go all the way until the end of the first round, and that's roughly, you know, 11:30, 11:45. So it's going to be a long night, but a good night, and it's always a lot of fun.
And then I would imagine, you know, you will be doing content to cover also as the draft goes on over the course of the weekend, obviously, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So after every night on Colts.com, we're going to do kind of a podcast recap. We call them overtimes. We'll have one after every round of the draft, so one tonight, Friday, and then Saturday. you know, Saturday is obviously the big one because we can talk about all the day three picks and just the draft from a big picture standpoint. But yeah, it's a long weekend. It's a lot of tracking and monitoring. But I do enjoy getting to know these guys both on the field, talking to them, you know, doing interviews with them via Zoom. So it's a long weekend, but it beats working, man. Like I get to sit here and talk ball and learn about these guys. So like, I don't look at it like it's a drag because you're away from whatever you'd be doing on a weekend. This is, again, it's a really, really important time, and to track it in a real time is, it's always a lot of fun.
You mean you feel disappointed you're not going to go play 18?
Yeah. That's the biggest disappointment is not being able to chase the ball around Audie Southside, Jimmy.
Good callback. Or Smock, either one. Either way's fine. They all work.
Yeah. Starashank, I mean Valley Vista, where you know, whatever you're into, man.
Matt, enjoy it, man. I know you're not going to have a beer tonight, but have plenty of coffee or Diet Mountain Dew or whatever beforehand, and then we'll be listening whenever the Colts make the pick for all the things that you guys have to say and breaking it down. Appreciate the time today.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right, Matt Taylor again, brought to you by, of course, as always, Shelby Materials, your concrete and aggregate experts.
2 o'clock in Indianapolis on Query and Company, or as our show's namesake likes to say, it's 2 o'clock everywhere in the Eastern time zone. I am Jimmy Cook, president of the company, CEO of the company. Behind the ones and twos is Eddie Garrison, and of course, chairman of the board himself, Jay Query, to my right. Colts draft countdown is mere hours away from pick 15, or better perhaps, depending on what Chris Ballard has in his bag of tricks. As we move right along our carousel of draft coverage, one of our favorites, if you've been a part of the company since its establishment back in August, you know him from frequent trips throughout the course of the NFL season. He just finished his NFL mock draft 3.0 3 days ago, in fact. He is Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL.com. Eric, happy draft day.
Happy draft day and draft weekend to all you and yours, those who celebrate. Yep.
Thank you for being with us throughout the course of the season, and good to talk to you as well this offseason. Out of the gate, and again, we've referenced this, mock drafts are tools, they're exercises, they don't necessarily guarantee the way things are going to happen, but I'd like to think with mock drafts that those that do them try to simulate what general managers' tendencies are. And with your most recent mock draft, I'm very happy with the selection, but you have the Colts moving up from 15 to 9 in a trade with the Chicago Bears to go get Brock Bowers out of Georgia. Now, kind of a two-part question. A, when you did that, do you consider Chris Bowers' tendencies, because that's just something he's never done?
Sure.
And B, why is this the year for it to happen if it does happen?
Yeah, two great questions, and I think that's exactly how you have to frame it. You have to say that this would be out of character for Chris Ballard. This is not how he's gone about business. He has been, by draft, you know, evaluations, pretty conservative. But, you know, he's obviously got an eye for talent. He's always kind of let the draft come to him. I'm sure there have been players that he has thought about moving up for in the past, wasn't able to do, or, you know, didn't have enough to offer, or whatever the case may be, and said, you know, I have regret. I wish I would have gone up and gotten that guy. But they have made some aggressive moves before, you know, trading their first for DeForest Buckner and things like that. So we've seen variations of deals that make some sense. But, you know, Bowers would be a great fit in Indy. You know, maybe they can sweat it out and get him a little later than that, or all the way to 15. There are some teams that are fascinated with him. I think the Sam Laporta effect and even the Dalton Kincaid effect last year probably opened some minds the idea of a tight end in the top half of the first round. For Chicago, it's great because they need a day two pick. They're picking first, ninth, and then got this massive wait until their next selection. So, and only four picks total. So they're definitely motivated to move down. Is Indy ready to move up? Are they poised for that kind of move? I don't know the answer to that. Only Chris does, only his tight inner circle does. And I guess it depends, like if Roma Dunze is somehow available in that same region, does that change their thinking? If another, you know, if a Brian Thomas is still out there too, do they just wait for him? I mean, you know, there are different ways to play this, and I think the Colts could come out with a receiver, a tight end, a corner. You know, there are multiple positions I could see them attacking.
Eric, let me throw this one at you and hopefully this even makes sense. I might lose myself in my own algebra here. Okay? if you are the Colts and you're looking to move up because you feel there's a player that is a difference maker for you that is 10 spots higher than where you're selecting, then that means that that is a player that you feel might kind of get you over the top of where you want to be. And as a result of that, unlike past years where you're in a 1 to 3 year window, maybe you feel like you're closer than, you know, you're right on the cusp. So giving up a number one in next year's draft is not as damning a blow to you because you are anticipating that's going to be a 26 to 30 pick as opposed to another first half of the round pick. Does that make sense and does that factor?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know exactly what you're saying there. The idea being that we think we're going to be better than where we finished last year. And therefore, that first round pick, you hear first round pick, oh, that's a big price. But if you're picking 28th, it's not nearly worth as much. So, yeah, there is some of that for sure. I think, you know, obviously there are teams that are going to make that kind of move because they absolutely have to. They don't have a quarterback or they're one piece away and they're willing to sacrifice it. So there are different levels of aggression there. But I absolutely think teams have an idea. First of all, they know what picks they have currently in the 2025 draft. They know what picks they might be getting in the compensatory picks too, right? I mean, that factors in as well that it starts in the third round. So there is some significant value there. So you always think about that. Do we have extra selections next year to play with? Yes. Okay. More likely to be aggressive. Do we feel like we're going to be picking, you know, we're closer to the top of the division than the bottom? That also helps out as well. So, yeah, I mean, it requires a little bit of faith and a little bit of a leap of faith. But, you know, teams that play it that way and are smart about it, maybe have some foresight that their trade partner does not have, you know, can work out really beautifully in the long run.
You know, when let's go back to Bowers, because I do believe, I think all of us do, Eric, that if he is there, that's who the Colts are. I mean, at 15, I can't see them passing on him, right? But let's begin with that particular player. If the Colts are looking to perhaps, let's just say, move to as high as 9 to try to get Bowers, the team that they would be looking at to see what that team is doing, the team that is the biggest threat to take Bowers away from Indianapolis that Indianapolis is watching closely and that our listeners should be looking for is who?
I mean, you know, it's funny. I would have said the Jets very reflexively and felt like that was the right answer. I don't know if that's right or not. I've heard a couple of names attached to the Jets that aren't Brock Bowers, you know, right? J.C. Latham, Roma Dunze, other players. So, I mean, you know, it may not be them. And that's the other question you have to have. Like, if you think that the Jets at 10 are your biggest threat to take him, which they very well could be, it's hard to really know. But if that's who you identify and you feel like you have to go above that spot, what happens if they were never really going to take the guy? Then all of a sudden you've paid a tax, you know, you paid inflation rates basically on the trade, whereas maybe you could have moved up less or could have stayed at 15. I'm like you. I suspect sitting back and waiting and hoping he gets to 15, I don't think is much of a draft strategy. It may work out, but I would think that there's a decent chance he goes above that. But, you know, the only other team that really kind of stands out as a possibility to me is Denver. And everyone's sort of bent on quarterback with them, and I get why. But there's some talk that if depending on how things go in the top 5-6 picks, Denver may go a different position at 12 or try to trade back, what have you, and come up from their, you know, from, you know, trading next year's pick and move into the bottom part of round one to get their QB. So I've heard Denver is a possibility for Bowers, and they're at 12, so that's kind of right in that nether region there. Maybe you only have to go to 11 or something. So all those possibilities exist. I mean, I heard the Colts really like Malik Nabers too. I don't, you know, can you get up high enough to get that guy? It's going to require a pretty big move and even more out of character for them. So there are just so many moving parts with this thing. It's a blast, but it's also a real tough puzzle to figure out.
Lead NFL draft analyst for NFL.com, Eric Edholm, is our guest. Eric, I threw flowers your way, and now I feel bad because I maybe have to partially take some of them back for a second. So in your mock draft, and again, we're not putting too much weight into these other than as discussions, but in your last mock draft, as I mentioned, you have the Colts trading up with Chicago to get the ninth pick to select Brock Bowers. I didn't realize until I took a closer look that you still have Roma Dunze on the board at that point, and him falling to 10, which is probably the one scenario, I hadn't even thought of that, where if the Colts were to get Bowers, I might be left a little unhappy. Why in that particular last mock do you have Dunze lasting that long?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Dunze would work great too. I mean, for me, it's like, you know, you're weighing two or three names in a lot of cases for each team. And then, you know, I mean, obviously no one's going to get a perfect mock, and trying to predict every situation is tough. And the question is, right, do they put a higher value on Bowers than a Dunze? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I would love to see what Brock Bowers could do for Anthony Richardson, and, you know, think he would really complement Pittman and Downs and all these guys in the run game. But you could certainly make the same case for Dunze, right? I mean, depending on what you think of Alec Pierce, and I think he would still have a pretty decent role in this offense. I mean, I would absolutely endorse the idea of having him start on the outside and maybe, you know, more three wide receiver, four wide receiver sets and fewer tight ends on the field. It kind of depends what they want to do. You know, sometimes those tight ends can be real mismatch pieces where you're – you know, defenses may feel like they can get away with playing a little bit more base, or they can get away with not playing as much dime. And somebody like Bowers could be the difference. So it's kind of all, you know, what's your flavor? I mean, they're totally different players, but I could see teams having both of those guys roughly in the same range.
Eric, this would be somewhat of doomsday for Colts fans because they don't want regression from Chris Bauer. They want continued aggressiveness and improvement. But let's lay it out there. Not only do they not trade up, but they trade back from their spot at 15. Why would Colts fans not need to totally lose their minds with that? What type of, if we're just sticking with picks, not players' picks, what type of assets would they be getting if they were to trade back from 15?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer. I mean, I've heard of a couple teams that might be aggressive moving up. Surprisingly, the Rams have been kind of the talk in the last sort of 48 hours. I've heard a couple different mentions of them maybe moving up from 19. If it's a move like that, like where you're only sliding back four spots, I probably wouldn't hate it, depending on who was on the board, who was, you know, there at 15. And I would imagine the Colts would want to know who the Rams are taking and you know, maybe agree to the deal after finding that out. You know, we saw a couple teams like the Patriots last year move back three, four spots, still get the player that they probably would have taken had they stayed at the original pick. So, you know, those scenarios can happen. And if Ballard gets up there Friday morning and says, hey, actually, this is the guy that we're – so Thursday night for that matter – you know, we would have taken this player at 15, but we were able to trade back four spots and get him. You know, I think that would be the pipe dream right there. Is there a receiver? Is there a corner? I think you may add pass rusher to that list too. I guess you could make a case for an offensive lineman too. It all depends on, I guess they would probably have to have four or five players kind of evenly rated, all available, all still on the board. And looking at the landscape and saying, you know, I mean, you risk moving behind Jacksonville, you know, who are looking at some similar positions. That's one big risk. You risk moving behind other teams that are kind of looking for similar spots too. So I think it's the least likely scenario. I think staying put is probably the most likely, but I wouldn't rule out the trade up. I think there's a possibility.
Eric Edholm is our guest, NFL.com, talking about the NFL draft. Eric, this time a year ago, I was doing the morning show, actually, and I think we had you on, and those guys suckered me into the horrific experience of putting mayo in my coffee in honor of Will Levis, who we thought was going to be like in the top 10 and, you know, a possibility for Indianapolis. He obviously slid a lot in the draft. This year's Will Levis, in other words, the guy that unfortunately they're going to be awkward green room shots of because he does have potential to slide higher than where he was anticipated, may be who?
Yeah, so Among the quarterbacks, I think you'd probably say the most likely to fall would probably be Bo Nix. You know, again, I don't know, does he go mid-first round or mid-second round? I think, you know, those two and anything in between, it's possible, depending on how the top of the draft goes. He's not invited here, so we won't get those painful green room shots. And I think those have mostly gone by the wayside. I mean, I give Roger Goodell some credit for recognizing how weird some of those past drafts got. They kind of hide those guys in back. But of the 13 guys invited here, I think the last one to be picked, if I had to guess, would maybe be Darius Robinson of Missouri. He may not be a first-round pick. There's some teams at the end that could take a chance on him. But, yeah, I would say he's probably the most likely of the 13 here in Detroit who may hear their name called. But I don't know that we're going to get anything too crazy.
Okay, is there anybody who jumps out at you when I give this category? And that is somebody that 2 months ago wasn't really in the discussion. And every time you turn around and look and everybody you talk to, you're like, this guy just continues to rise.
Good question. J.C. Latham, I think, is going pretty high in this draft. You know, I mean, I think my first couple mocks, I put him sort of in that, you know, 15 to 25 range. I think he'll be gone by that point. I think he'll be off the board in the first, let's say, dozen picks, anywhere from the Chargers at 5 down to, you know, the 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that range. So I think he's going pretty high, and there may even be a chance, if the Chargers can't move out, that they take him ahead of Joe Alt. So that's a little bit of a surprise, and a little bit of an Indiana connection there with Alt, obviously. So, you know, I would say Byron Murphy is another one. I haven't been able to figure out who the team might be. Maybe that's the Rams. You know, you lose Aaron Donald, and I would put a lot of pressure on the young man because he's kind of built similarly to Donald, but boy, that would be a fascinating move if they moved up to, let's say, Atlanta at 8 or, you know, 5 even. I don't know they'd go that high, but Byron Murphy, the D tackle from Texas, I think is going to, I would say, go somewhere in the first 13 or 14 picks, where some people may have them going a little lower.
Eric Edholm joins us, lead draft analyst for NFL.com. Eric, another two-parter for you. First one's, I guess, a simple yes or no. Did you see Puka Nacua coming last year?
Well, I didn't see that, of course. I'm not going to try to pretend like I saw a Pro Bowl season. He really caught my eye at the Senior Bowl, though. He only practiced one day. He made a couple of fantastic catches to the point where I'm saying, who is this guy? I knew who he was, but I'm thinking he's better than I remembered him being. So there was at least some intrigue. I can't claim to have seen a 1,000 yards.
No, I would have tipped the cap if you did, and then I would have had to go back and check the tapes to make sure that was accurate. So that's right. Kind of what I figured, like, was he on your radar or not? And I hate when people do this. You're all, who's the next Brock Purdy? Who's the next Patrick Mahomes? Sure. Like, they're one of ones. Like, it doesn't often happen that you hit that kind of lightning in a bottle late in the draft like that. So if we squeeze in instead to, like, middle of the draft, is there a wide receiver target that – I'm not going to say replicate what Puka did because what he did was insane, but is there a middle-of-the-draft wide receiver that has number one potential, if not this year, then maybe 2 years into the league?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of guys who have been number one receivers in college, and for various reasons, maybe they're not the fastest, maybe they're not the biggest, you know, aren't being projected that same way. You know, I would say Keon Coleman. I know he's not. I mean, he's probably somebody who goes in, you know, between the 40th and the 60th pick, let's say. So that's not exactly Nacua range. But when he ran a 4.61, people were down on him. I mean, it was like, well, but he's a really well built guy who makes incredible, you know, body control catches and things like that. I think he's a dude. So, you know, borderline as far as whether he can be a number one or not, but I think he can be an alpha type guy in the right offense. Obviously, Xavier Worthy, you know, his speed could give a difference to a team and be like a, you know, somebody just sort of take the top off defenses. You know, if you want to go a little deeper than that, I would say somebody like Jalen McMillan from Washington. Not the biggest guy, didn't run the fastest 40. He's just fluid and smooth. Maybe a little too much like Josh Downs, so I don't know that he's necessarily a perfect fit for Indy, but maybe. I mean, I just think that, you know, you look pre-injury for him getting hurt last year. He was he was running ahead of Jalen Polk, and he was doing a lot and catching almost as many passes as Roma Dunze. So he's one. And Jermaine Burton at Alabama, too, I feel like is better than I realized and maybe has more fans in the NFL. I think, you know, he and A.D. Mitchell are kind of similar in the sense that they weren't always featured in college, but you saw explosive ability out of both of them in kind of run-heavy offenses at the highest level in the SEC. So, you know, until Mitchell went to Texas, but, you know, he was at Georgia before that. So those are a few guys that I think in a deep receiver class could maybe slip through the cracks a little bit and end up being better than where their position is.
Let's say, Eric, that hypothetically – that the Colts stay at 15, okay? Is there a player that you can think of, and let's say Bowers is gone, okay?
Yep.
Is there somebody that, if at that point Chris Ballard is saying, look, I've got to go either Richardson target or corner.
Yeah.
Is there a guy, though, that could potentially fall to 15 that, and it's only because of, like, the way teams draft in front of Indianapolis that Chris Ballard says, you know what, this guy was not somebody that's even a position of dire need for me, but he is so gifted that I cannot pass on it right now. Is there anybody in that range that jumps out that could fit that description?
I definitely think one of those top two corners, whether it's Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo or Terrion Arnold from Alabama, would fit that mold. If that's too much in the need category, then I would maybe go back to Byron Murphy. If he doesn't go in the top 14 selections again, which I think he will, but I don't know. I mean, you know, there have been scenarios that have played out the last couple of years that really surprised me based on things I'd heard in the weeks and months leading up to the draft. So you never really know. But, yeah, I mean, that might be a little bit out of position for what they're looking for. But I think if those top receivers are gone, Bowers is gone, and one of the two corners is still available, especially if it's Terrion Arnold, although I wouldn't think that Mitchell is somebody they wouldn't like. I think they'd like both, but you know, both of them really would make a lot of sense for Ballard and for the team's needs, and would be a good upside pick. Both of them, I think, could be really good in this league.
Okay, there is precedent for the Colts, and for that matter, for Chris Ballard specifically, to maybe let a guy that they thought was first-round talent, Dio comes to mind, right? They did the same thing with Julian Blackman, where they look at a guy, Bob Sanders, for that matter, going way back, where they let a guy slip to them that they say, we're going to wait, get crafty, we'll take him in round two, let him get healthy, and then we've got first-round talent with it. Is there any chance that Kool-Aid McKinstry drops to 40 because of, I guess, some questions about his foot, some injury issue? Could he be a guy that slides all the way back to Indianapolis in round two without them having to move?
Yeah, that's a good question. It may be close. I mean, where do you say they're 46 or something like that?
40,
in round
I
two,
think.
Right?
Yeah, they're 15 and 40.
Yeah, that's going to be a little bit of a stretch, maybe. But again, I it's hard to know how all 32 teams view injury information. I had one team tell me they were scared by Latu for his injury stuff. Another team said they were fine with it. Same with Michael Penix, you know, and it applies to Brian Thomas Jr. was flagged by some teams and cleared by others. And, you know, the same thing with Kool-Aid, I'm guessing. So that said, it would be on the back end. It would be close, but I would think it would be tough to get them all the way to that second round pick.
Where do you see another local tie? And we've asked a couple different analysts this over the last couple of days, but just from your board, because you do have him in the first round, where do you see ultimately happening for Michael Penix Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders feel like the most sensible possibility, but if the Vikings miss out on, I've heard Bo Nix is really more their guy, but again, I would say they could at least be a possibility. But yeah, I mean, I think the Raiders make the most sense at this point. I put him 13. It felt like, man, do I really think that's going to happen? I don't know, you know. But
do you think he's a backup is out of the gate with O'Connell there? Do you think that they ease him in if they were to make that pick?
And Gardner.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I totally forgot about Minshew. Yeah. That's my fault. Yeah.
I mean,
do you think he eases in?
For a month, everybody thought, okay, that's your battle, and they'll probably pick one next year. But now the talk has kind of sped up a little. They were even, trying to get up to number two to get Jaden Daniels because of Antonio Pierce's relationship with him and just the need for a quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the Raiders get aggressive, and we'll see. I mean, I guess the other teams to watch out for, maybe if New England makes some big move down, if they get blown away by an offer at three, you know, again, the same usual suspects who are looking for a quarterback would include Minnesota. I don't think the Giants are a realistic possibility unless he makes, you know, if he slides in a round two, then you might talk about him. But, yeah, it feels like the Raiders can get him if they want.
Eric Edholm, NFL.com. All right, Eric, lastly here, if you had to take a prop bet on which of these two do you think is safer, okay? Would you rather go with the bet of on one of the embraces, Roger Goodell and a recent draft pick sway to the left, to the right, then back to the left and back to the right during their hug, over under a four? Or would you go with the prop bet of one of the embraces awkwardly lasting over or under 8 seconds?
I understand the question's asked tongue-in-cheek. This is where I have to say, like, I'm not allowed to dispense any betting advice for NFL. It's part of my job. However, I love the question. I love the prop. It's a demonstration of how insane this process has gotten.
It is, man.
It feels like an under this year. That's just me. I'm just saying that again. Don't take my words. But
okay, then how about this? Again, no wagering is being offered here. If you were to predict, though, would you say that there would be more PO'd fans from the Giants or the Bills when their pick is drafted?
Ooh, good question. I mean,
or Jets. Jets also never happy, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, Giants fans are very nervous. I have a few who are texting me this week saying, like, please tell me we're not taking a quarterback. Please tell me we're getting a receiver. So I could see things going haywire for them, but I think the Jets own this category now and forever, whether the draft's held in Antarctica. You know, I mean, they're always going to be the ones that we pan to and have the camera on the Jets fan room, where they're tearing everything down off the walls and stuff. I think they're the most likely one, especially after they've heard some pretty big names. There's been rumors of them trading up for Marvin Harrison Jr. So that may not happen. The other big stuff, like Bowers, may not happen. I think they're the prime candidates to be the biggest disappointment.
He is Eric Edholm, covers all things NFL draft for NFL.com. His most recent mock, 3.0, up 3 days ago on NFL.com. Eric, we're looking forward to all your coverage. Anywhere specifically you want to plug? NFL Network, I know, is doing wall-to-wall coverage, but where folks can find your work over these next couple days?
Yeah, I'll be doing various stuff tonight, depending on how the action shakes out. And then rounds 2 through 7, believe it or not, I'm going to find the strength to write a comment on every single pick. So I'll be doing pick-by-pick analysis days 2 and 3, and you can do the math. That's a lot of picks. So hopefully I'll be alive on the other side to tell the tale.
Eric, we appreciate it. Get some caffeine. It's going to be a long haul, but it's a fun haul, and it's what you live for. So appreciate you sharing some time with us.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
All right, Eric Edholm again from NFL.com.